Welcome to Podcast One. We hope you'll support our sponsors who bring you these podcasts absolutely free and with limited interruptions. And of course, we appreciate you listening to this show, which will get started in just a second.
Norman, let's talk about the new Podcast One app.
I don't want to do that. I don't want to talk about the new Podcast One app.
I want to just listen to it because it's so amazing.
That's what I want to do.
Well, in the meantime, there is no other podcast app like this. If you're listening and you're not on the new app, download the all-new Podcast One app now at the App Store on Google Play. You can find out everything about your favorite shows, including all of the above.
Including all of the above, which is the show we are doing together. This is Paul Hipp who said that, Norman Lear who's listening, and who will tune in himself.
And the great thing is you get more content from our show. You can find articles, social media posts, past episodes, and even make playlists. It's easy to comment and connect with other show fans. We have our own little community on there, you know. Did you know that we have a little community on there?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's our favorite part, right?
We call that community America.
Yeah, exactly.
And the world.
And the world. And the world at large. You get to connect with all of our fans, and fans get to connect with each other. We connect with the fans, and they connect with each other. Everybody's connected. It's so cool and so unique.
And we're at a time when we need connection more than ever.
That's true. Plus, you can get 360 videos or watch a bunch of shows in virtual reality. There's over 1,000 videos on there right now.
How about that?
It's like you're in the studio. Well, we are in the studio, but for the listeners, it would be like they're in the studio. It'd be very crowded in here, though, by the way. They've even got rewards for listening and a slew of other great perks. So be sure to download the new Podcast One app from the App Store or on Google Play now.
He's an American icon who fought in World War II, gave you Martin and Lewis, Martha Ray, George Gobel, Tennessee Ernie Ford, Andy Williams, Fried Green Tomatoes, Spinal Tap, The Princess Bride, The Sure Thing, Stand By Me, The Declaration of Independence, People for the American Way, and a few TV shows.
Maybe you've heard of a couple of these.
Family, Sanford and Son, Maude, Good Times, The Jeffersons, Hot L, Baltimore, One Day at a Time, Mary Harmon, The Dumplings, All's Fair, All the Glitters, Fernwood Tonight, America Tonight, Different Strokes, The Facts of Life, The Baxters, Archie Bunker's Place, Silver Spoons, Gloria, Square Pegs, a.k.a. Pablo, Who's the Boss, 227, Sunday Dinner, The Powers That Be, 704, Hauser, Channel Umpteen and 3, One Day at a Time on Netflix.
All of the above with Norman Lear. It's all of the above with Norman Lear. What you do, you know that Norman Lear is just another version of you.
So, I'm sitting here with Pete Herman, Roger Rosenblatt, Sammy Schneider, what the hell is the name here?
Paul? Wait, what?
I'm sitting with Paul Witt. No, this call is for me. Let's listen, folks. Who knows who this could be? Hello?
Norman, hi, it's Billy Crystal.
Hello, Billy. You know, I'm. You may not want to continue this conversation at this particular moment because I'm on a podcast.
Yes, you should, and put him on speaker.
Okay, goodbye.
Okay, so can I just say, before we're even through the introduction of this week's podcast, the phone rings, and it's Billy Crystal. That's your life. That's the life that you lead. Glamorous.
Well, but Billy Crystal's just another fella.
Yeah, but I'm not getting phone calls from Billy Crystal. I'm getting phone calls from, you know, my mom. Not that she's not glamorous, but it's not as exciting. Billy Crystal. Oh, hi, Billy Crystal.
I would feel just as excited about hearing from your mom.
Yeah, but that's because
I'm full of shit. That's because. ladies and gentlemen, we are introducing all of the above that we do weekly.
Week.
Usually Thursdays.
Yes.
For those crowds of you who care to come and watch this.
We should do it live sometime. That would be great.
Live sometime, yes. I consider myself alive now.
No, but I mean with an audience.
That would be really live.
You know.
That's Paul Hipp talking, and I'm Norman Lear. We both have headphones on, and we look quite attractive.
Yeah,
and
we look professional.
Introducing the Eliza Schlesinger version episode of Podcast One's All of the Above.
Yes.
All of the Above with Norman Lear.
You know Norman.
Yes, I know Norman. I know Norman so well.
Norman, I've got a secret. There's something about True Car a lot of people don't know.
Oh, my God. Yeah. What can that be? What can that be?
Well, using True Car can also help you buy a used car. In fact, there are over 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available from True Car Certified.
That's a big figure. 700,000 is a big, big figure.
Huge figure. 700,000 people.
Okay. I was with them this morning. They were all buying used cars.
And they were buying them at TrueCar.com. They have 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available from True Car Certified dealers nationwide. Whether you're looking to buy a new car, a used car, you can get upfront pricing information that empowers discounts off the list price for used cars and a better buying experience through our True Car Certified dealer network.
That's an awful lot they give you.
Isn't it? It's amazing. Yeah. There are over 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available for True Car Certified dealers nationwide. You'll see what other people paid for the car you want so you can know what a fair price is and feel confident.
How about that? It's TrueCar.com.
You'll see what other people paid for the car you want so you can know what the fair price is and feel confident. With True Car, you can connect with a local certified dealer of your choosing so you can enjoy a quick, easy buying experience.
Ladies and gentlemen, TrueCar.com. Go there.
Using True Car, you can easily find the new or used car you want. When you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit True Car and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.
Now back to All of the Above with Norman Lear.
I think we're calling this All of the Above. All of the Above with Norman Lear. That's me. And Paul Hipp sitting at my side here.
That's me.
All of the Above will be discussed with Eliza, who opened the door and walked in here and graced this table and these microphones.
Not off the street. She was invited. You were invited.
I was told I was invited.
She just crashed in, you know.
With her presence.
Because we're fans.
And you have your own show. Tell us about this.
We're waiting on a second season of Truth and Eliza, which you were so gracious to come on as my interview.
It was great fun.
It was a lot of fun and gave me a lot of clout because I was like, look who I got.
Oh, I do that. I carry this bag of clout around with me. And
clout everywhere.
Hand it out freely.
Just spilling clout.
Yeah. That's really funny. You kind of do.
Just a little satchel of clout.
But talk about funny and interesting and sensible and deep. This Eliza person is all of that.
You guys didn't read my bio, did you?
Do I what?
You didn't read my bio, did you?
I looked at the pictures.
I didn't read it today.
I looked at the pictures.
Yeah, you seem like you would have looked at the pictures only.
You mean all of that is wrong?
No, I was kidding. So we did the late night show. I have a book coming out November 7th with Weinstein Publications. That's called Girl Logic.
Girl Logic.
Yeah.
I want to talk about that.
Okay. There is some There is some there. Handed out with the clout.
But the book is coming out, when did you say?
November 7th.
November 7th. That's a good date.
It's available for pre-order now on Amazon. Thank you for the coffee. She's gone. And so that comes out then. And so now we're just waiting. It's TV. So it's just like a lot of waiting. And I'm just on tour.
Well, life is full of a lot of waiting. If you're lucky.
If you're lucky, you get to wait.
Yes. Yeah. I've gotten to wait a reasonable amount of time in 95 years. Did I say 95 years?
Yes.
I said that.
Just a few days ago turned 95, right?
Yes, and let me tell you.
How does it feel?
I had the greatest day I can remember. I had all six kids and three of my four grandkids. Just that. And the best food. And we had a great time. I'm the fortunate man to have kids. My kids, by the way, Eliza, range from 22 to 70.
Oh, my God. That's so crazy.
And they are as close as I would wish them cared for them to be.
Right.
It's just great. So yeah. We had a great day.
What would be amazing is if they were all from the same woman. In it for the long haul.
That would be amazing.
I have to take out my Invisalign, so I just rather than freak everyone out.
What is an Invisalign? I guess we'll learn.
It's like a mouth guard but straightens your teeth.
Oh.
I can't drink coffee with that.
Oh. Your teeth, by the way, are much straighter than they were last time I saw them.
No, don't even say that.
Look how straight they are.
Yeah. The bottom.
Oh, I like that the Invisalign gets stored in the...
In my sports bra?
Yeah.
Holds a lot. There's a lot of weight. Yeah.
I swear, when you walked in, I said to myself, look how straight her teeth are.
Yeah.
That's what I'm known for.
Yeah.
the main reason I don't get work, because they're so, it's just so blinding.
So the book is a memoir, I take it.
No,
the book is not a memoir.
It's not a memoir.
I'm 34, and I have had a nice run in show business, but definitely nowhere near, I'm talking to Norman Lear, nowhere where I want to be. And I felt there was something just so self-aggrandizing at 34 about being like, here's how you make it. I'm like, well, yeah, here's how you make it to the middle. So I took a different approach, and I called the book Girl Logic, and it sort of gives insight to the way that women think, not in like a Steve Harvey way. Think like a man, act like a woman, whatever. This is more, women are so expected to consider the past, present, and future in everything that we do because so much is required of women. You know, in one sitting, you're supposed to be sexual, but sensible, kind, but stand up for yourself, vulnerable, but tough. And so in all the things that we do, we have to factor in these expectations, and that makes decision-making a process, one that we get criticized for a lot, you know. So you're on a date, and the guy's like, what do you want to eat? And then it's always like, oh, she can never decide. And it's like, but there's a reason we can't decide. So I sort of give credence to that process.
And the reason?
The reason is it's not as simple as I'm hungry, I'll get pizza. It's, did I work out today? Do I already feel fat? The answer is always yes. Do I have something to wear tonight? Am I wearing all white? Am I eating cheese this week? Am I eating gluten? Like, these seem like weird, pedantic things, but they all factor in.
But why do you assume that they're reserved for women? I'm relating to everything you're saying.
I don't, but I couldn't write a book called Guy Logic because I would very quickly be taken down because I'm not a guy. We're living in this time now.
That's very clear to me.
Thank you. But it's all, honesty, you know, you have to write from what you know. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't even pretend that I knew anyone else's struggles because you'll get executed for it.
I want to talk about that a little further.
Yeah.
I recognize a strong feminine side in me. Mm-hmm. Always have. Already for a reasonable amount of years have recognized that there, I think that may be the part that's relating to what you said. Because as you expressed all the things expected of you because you're a woman, it may be that some of what I was relating to was a result of a recognition of my own strong feminine side.
I wonder, it's interesting to hear somebody, I'm going to be frank, of your age say that, because I don't think of your generation as one that was allowed to recognize femininity and softness. So I don't know. I would like to think.
I think you're right about that, by the way.
For sure.
Not my generation.
I think the more evolved you are as a human, you're able to be comfortable with your masculine side, your feminine side. A lot of times that's what people say when they say, like, sexuality is fluid. They don't mean that you can want to have sex with men and women. It just means that you can identify with those strengths. I wonder if it factors into being an entertainer and being a grandfather and a husband. And so you're wearing so many hats. But I think they still, a lot of them fall under the category of being a male. And I don't know what's expected of men. I have great respect for what is expected, but I could only write with any experience for the girl logic because it's in my head, you know? But it doesn't mean to take away from what men are expected to do in our society and how difficult that is.
So what is expected when you're asked, what do you want to eat? And then it fires off all of those things?
Well, it's an expectation.
What is the expectation on you?
Depends on who you're asking. You know, there's the one side where it's like, who cares what people think? But that is so much easier said than done. The expectation from the guy asking you is that you give an answer. But the reality is you can't give that answer right away. You can. You can say pizza. Mm-hmm. Because you have to factor in all the things that are expected of you in society. If I eat this pizza and I look puffy in a bathing suit, then people won't think I'm thin and women are supposed to look a certain way. If I don't stick to my diet, then in the long run, if I don't feel well, then I've let myself down. It's just, and it's not for everything, but it's this ongoing thing because of what people expect from women. I mean, in the same date, you're expected to be demure, but maybe sexy. Like, who knows what that guy wants? Who knows how you're feeling at the moment? And so it sounds exhausting. Try living it.
How much of it, what you're describing, would you wish changed?
Or I thought you were going to say, would you wish on your enemy?
when you say that, I think, well, you would wish it all to change.
Right. I mean, there are times, and this is a room of men. I think there's some women out there. There are times when, like, I'm getting dressed. And it's usually for a simple thing that I found myself paralyzed because you know, you feel that within the, like, in that outfit you're picking, you're going to make a first impression, a lasting impression. You're going to be impressing different types of people. And I wish that women, I'm not allowed to speak for all women, could let that go sometimes and just be like, it is what it is, putting on pants. And I do that plenty of times, but just kind of removing that doubt.
But maybe it isn't what it is. Maybe it is what you are.
Totally. But I think, you know, we always like to think that we're all these precious snowflakes and we're all so unique. And the only thing I've gleaned from 12 years in stand-up is that the crazy thoughts I have as a girl, all the other girls have. It's like the one through line through the net, like they're all three Netflix specials, is that girls come up and they're like, I had that same thought. So I've found confidence.
Share a particularly interesting, maybe even secret thought.
Secret? Well, this is in the book, and comedy, and you know this, the more you give, the more honest you are in comedy, the more reward you're going to get, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's, and the more personal you get, you know, just you have to decide how much you want to give. But I, and this might ring hollow for you guys, but I made this joke years ago about getting ready and how there's so many things girls have to do to get ready, including shaving your big toe, which, because women aren't allowed to have hair, right? I have blonde hair. I'm not like a hairy person, but I have like three hairs on my big toe. And I said it, and you know, some guys cringe. It's like, ew. And then some girls are like, ew. And I'm like, if you're not laughing, you're a liar. The amount of women, and I said it just because it was, I don't have a lot of gross personal things, but it was one thing that I had that I wouldn't want to admit to a man I was attracted to, that like I shaved these like three witch hairs on my toe. And in the years, the girls that have come up to be like, I do that too. And I'm like, yeah, I can see your mustache. Of course you do.
I have something to say.
Is it a secret?
Yeah, it's a secret. You've freed me. I shaved the edge of my ears.
Oh.
I was driving down the road one day and I looked in the rearview mirror and there were these fine blonde hairs growing out the edge of
my
ears.
They were blonde and you shaved them?
They were probably white. And I nearly drove. I knew
platinum blonde.
They were platinum blonde. Like the platinum blonde hair that I get rid of once a month on my head. But anyway, and I nearly drove off the road. And my friend, who's 70-something, I told him he's an Englishman. He said, oh, yes, well, darling, you've just joined a very exclusive club. Wait until they start growing out the end of your fucking nose. And you have to shave. So I have to shave my ears. Thank you. I feel so free now.
Right?
Thank you
and
for that.
So many men will... They'll feel comfortable. I think, you know, we all put up these walls and everybody wants to appear a certain way. We all want to look younger and better, but there is a freedom in just admitting it.
Yes.
That being said, it's not the most attractive thing to hear.
But everybody has it.
But you don't think that.
I thought hearing that you had three hairs on your big toe was sexy as hell.
Thank you.
Sexier than you shaved them.
I want to tell you that I have, for some years, been looking for a woman. Yeah. With hair on her toe.
Okay, well, yeah. You're ready to make that age-raging grand.
Contrary to that, I am so glad you cut those hairs off your ear.
Yeah.
They were distressing.
They were bothering you. No, because they stick out of the headphones.
Uh-huh. The cat whiskers.
Wow. I'm gonna ask my wife if she shaves her toe.
Ask your wife. I can tell you, if you tell me what she looks like and her maiden last name, I could tell you if she shaves her toe.
She's Babylas is her maiden name. It's Greek.
She definitely shaves her toe and other things.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. Do you
shave the toe when doing the whole grooming thing, or is that get its own time?
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm engaged, so I don't really shave
my toes. I was about to ask you.
Yes.
You walked in with a gentleman. That's my publicist. That's your publicist.
And the guy next to him, I don't know who that is.
That's a fellow, Jesus, who drives.
Hey, Jesus.
Hey, Jesus.
Show her how you drive, Jesus. Yeah, see how he drives?
Great. I really understand it.
Now, for those who are listening, Jesus, when I said, see how you drive, he picked up his hands and pretended that he had a wheel, and he turned. He raised one hand and dropped the other. You know what I mean.
Isn't that always the pantomime for driving, as if anyone moves that much?
Is there anything else? You know who used to do it differently? When he walked in and saw a big table, Jerry Lewis, at the very beginning of his career, saw a round table.
Uh-huh.
He used to grab it and say, step to the rear of the bus.
So silly.
And everybody always got it. step to the rear of the
Who has a story like that? Like, I want stories like that. I want to be like, you know, I have a story about a mega larger-than-life comedy celebrity. I'm so envious of your treasure trove of one-offs like that. Like, you just had that. And it wasn't even bragging. You're like, here's something I know.
That's a book you should read. It's his book.
That's how I met him.
Yeah. Oh, really?
I got his book. And then, we had our segment on our show, and I was like, fun fact, reading his book. And I think you would be great. And you said yes, which is the craziest part. You said yes to being on my show.
That was a great bit you guys did, too.
The segment was, the show was about millennials. And I was like, to understand young people, we must ask someone who's been there. And so the segment was called Ask an Elder, because I think the word elder is very funny.
Right.
And you sat with me for an hour. We chopped it down to, you know, a 3-minute thing, and I showed him Snapchat, and it was very cute. And he had a deer filter.
It was great.
It was really sweet. But yeah, that's not my fiance. That's my publicist. But we're best friends, so it's okay.
I want to ask you something about that we've talked about, which is one of your shows I think you did on, is Society Devolving.
Oh, yes, that was one.
Which I think is, and how do you see that as a...
It can't
As an
be.
Elder millennial.
As an, I am an elder.
I've heard you describe
34.
An wizened. Elder millennial.
I'm the oldest of my age group. It can't be devolving by virtue of the fact that we have so many wonderful advancements. It can't be devolving on the whole, but we are losing things. We're losing etiquette. We're losing the ability to interact in person. Even within millennials, it's about a 20-year age difference. I'm not saying my generation is like the hardest working generation, but the ones that are a couple years younger, like after we had our horrific election, my assistant at the time called me and said, I can't come into work. I need a day. And I was in tears too, but like I still got on stage that night, you know.
Oh, she couldn't come in because she was so...
Probably hungover, but she needed a minute, you know. I think there's some statistic about my generation, millennials are having less sex than any other generation.
Is that true?
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking at your phone... You know, and there's that stimulation. There's like a whole rewiring neurologically that's happening.
Yeah.
So you're making all these great technological advancements and making things faster, but we're not doing things like riding our bikes in the afternoon. Like we're not doing things that we grew up doing, which every generation laments what they lost. But I definitely think like civitas wise and like person to person, there's something lost there.
There's no doubt about it in my mind. When you walk into a restaurant, you see five people sitting at dinner, three of them on cell phones.
Yeah.
Or when you're with your family, and it's you are the people sitting at dinner, and three of us have, and it could be you. It could be me. It could be my wife. My wife, in the car, there's no more conversation. She's on her cell phone.
On the phone.
Mm. Yeah.
I'm of the generation, I'm the last one to be born where we didn't have the internet, we didn't have cell phones already.
Right.
You know, within a couple
landlines.
Of years. Landlines. Gather around. And it's kind of sad because I still remember what it's like to have civil discourse and not be on my phone. And I still go out of my way to say, you know what, I'm going to put the phone down. Or if this person can't be on their phone, I'll put mine down too. And I try to be aware of when I'm on my phone and pretending to listen to someone because it's such a shitty feeling when someone's texting. I'm like, there's no way you can hear me.
Yeah, I won't do that. That's alien to me. And I see people do it all the time.
It's rude. And because it's become okay, it's not seen as rude because everyone does it. And I see it when I'm around my mother. She's like, what are you doing on your phone? You're talking on your phone. I'm like, I'm texting. I'm doing anything but listening to you is what I'm doing. But... they see it.
Yeah, and common courtesy seems to be disappearing in a lot of places.
Well, things that take time seem to be disappearing.
Yeah, I think that's right.
I had a relationship, a great relationship with Fred Allen was a major comedian on radio. And the Fred Allen Hour was a huge show. There was some talk about his doing, when we were doing television, early television, there was some talk about his doing a Colgate Comedy Hour.
And we
were doing that with Martin and Lewis. So we had a meeting with Fred Allen. He was, I can't tell you how much he was my hero. He was an intellectual, I don't like using that word, because he was just as smart as could be, and he talked about things that needed, he made comedy of things that needed to be made comedy of. He was fabulous. And so we met with him this once, and he didn't do, never did the television show. It just never happened. But we sent him, Ed Simmons and I, sent him a Christmas card. We get a letter from him. I want to thank you for your Christmas card. I don't send Christmas cards, but I understand that people do like to know they were received and accepted and so forth. So yours was received and accepted. Thank you. So I sent back a letter to him. I said, dear Mr. Allen, we don't send thank you cards
for Christmas cards. Yeah,
but we appreciate that you... and thank you very much. And then idly, for no reason, I put a P.S. on it and said that Sam Semenow said the Andirons arrived with two legs broken. That's... We get a letter to Simmons and Lear, and then another letter to the same address to Sam Semenow. And he makes a story of these, of this line, of the Andirons and Ingots, and why they were wrapped, the way they were wrapped, and how they were wrapped.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
And it was hilarious. That started, a long way to saying, it started a relationship where he had a relationship with this man that didn't exist. Mm-hmm. We had blotters made. Do you remember what blotters were?
On the desk.
to blot ink, because you were using blotters.
We just had it for show.
So you wrote your name or whatever, and then you blotted it so that it never...
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. and stationery. Sam Semenow. Sam Semenow, Andirons and Ingots. My bell, if you ring it, I'll sell you an ingot. Anyway, for several years, we received these letters and we answered them and so forth to Sam Semenow. And when we were in New York, we had a Semenow seminar. That was a dinner. I met S.J. Perlman, one of the great comedy writers of all time, in this situation. We had the leisure or the time, or we made it. I don't know how to express it. But I don't think the time for that kind of relationship, for spending all that time in work or effort or, you know, in the same direction, making each other laugh, but at no profit,
right?
No pay, time. We had the time for it. We made the time.
Well, you had to have done, it was letters, right? It wasn't text. If you were texting, this would have been a 5-minute exchange, no, and then it would have been done one of many during the day. You're writing letters. You're physically writing, putting a stamp, putting the thing, waiting to see what the next thing will be.
Well, I think you had the time because you wanted to make the time, a mutual sort of admiration for that, for the comedy. And I think everything was not so much slower, but slower back then. Like, everything took more time. But even now, when somebody takes the time, I'm always touched when people do things that are human. When somebody takes the time to write a thank you note, or even a thank you email, or even a phone call. Because the rest of the time, you're like, why is this person calling me? There's sort of like an old world elegance that's lost. Mm. My mother is kind of like an older mom. So she's a baby boomer, but she was a little bit older. So she sort of retained this sort of old world elegance from her parents. And she kind of passed that on to me. But I find that it's so often wasted on my contemporaries, going out of the way to say, to pull someone aside to thank them or to write them a follow-up thank you or something. And it's almost, you almost feel like a loser for doing it, because it's seldom appreciated. Mm. And no one ever comments on your manners, you know?
Right.
And so our society's devolving in that way, because it kind of, you expect less from yourself because you're like, well, no one's noticing it. I guess I just won't do it.
Yeah.
And it's okay, especially in LA. People don't even write back to emails. I had a girlfriend just, if this is a thing, broke up with a friend of hers. And he wrote her this kind of bitchy email back. And she was like, what do I say? I'm like, first of all, you need to move to L.A. Because in L.A., when we don't write back, no one ever challenges us on why we didn't write back. You could text someone you were married to, and then they don't write back. And you would never have the gall to be like, why didn't you write me back? You just let it go because everyone wants to look like they're cool.
Yeah.
So you're just like, oh, I never got it. Well, where to go?
But then meanwhile, there's the thing in the modern world, because someone texts you or because they emailed you, and sometimes an email, long email with so many different points that you're not interested. Do I have to write back to every single thing?
It depends on who it is, but no. Great.
No.
Thanks.
Right. Exactly. Great. Yeah. Got it.
It depends on the, I hate to say a power, but who needs something from who needs something from whom? If the person If you have what they want, then you can answer it at your leisure. Right.
Right.
And also, do you want to be the kind of person that treats people like garbage? No. I always, when younger comics write to me, I always try to give them the time of day. But if you send me a 20-minute clip, I'm not going to watch that.
Right,
I'm like, no one's going to watch this. Cut this down to four. That's a Tonight Show set. Yeah. So, but yeah, you want to treat people decently.
I think the airline, I think airplanes, there's something too about the corporations and trying to to separate us from every last dollar we have. And now it's okay for them to put the seats on planes, not as close as, but closer than they should be, so that no human being can fit in them, so they can squeeze out more money. And then we accept it. It becomes the new norm.
Right.
The new norm in every aspect of life. 9/11
did that too.
Remember?
It was,
yeah. Well,
I mean, when you were younger, they had like China on first class flights. Like it was like an experience. You dressed up for flying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I get on planes. Right,
there was a big article in the Times yesterday or day before yesterday or every other day about people being squeezed out of their homes by insurance companies and so forth. Bad behavior on the part of major corporations. I think the name of the game is a profit statement this quarter larger than the last at the name of every other value, at the expense, I should say, of every other value. That's corporate America, and
what's capitalism?
That's excessive capitalism. Yeah.
When you say that thing about there's nothing in nature to suggest that anything
can grow forever,
growing forever.
Nothing.
The universe.
But
ever expanding.
Well, we have no real proof of that. We understand just so much about that.
Sure. Right. Nothing can grow forever.
I ask myself all the time, this, in terms of the universe expanding. This being a planet among, they say, a billion possible, and in a universe of which there could be a million universes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then you take this planet, which, takes itself so seriously, it's just one of zillions, and maybe this has all happened before.
Oh, I think about that all the time.
Hmm.
What if we're just particles in the atmosphere of someone else's universe, like at the end of Men in Black, when the universe is on the cat's little... collar. And it's weird because, sometimes something bad happens and then you have this, you remember, like, none of this matters. Like, we will all be dead in 100 years. None of this matters. But because you're
living it.
It may
not take 100 years.
You'll be around for another 100 for sure.
Yeah.
But it's such a nihilist attitude to be like, none of this matters, because it does. By virtue of the fact that we are and we're living, the fact that I didn't like my audition this morning will overshadow the rest of my day. Because that's what humans do. You worry about yourself and others, and it does matter, because if it doesn't matter, then it's not, then what's the point of life if things don't matter?
But I think that's the journey is to, so you, can you go from that bad audition not completely destroying the rest of your day, which I've certainly had that happen.
Right.
Or to, that was a drag, and it's kind of there the rest of the day, but you can get past it.
Sure, that's what life is, not allowing things to drag you down and having that perspective. But, you know, it's here's something that always bothers me. This is tangentially related. I can't stand when I have a bad experience. Let's say it's at a company. Let's say I buy something, or I buy an airline seat, or I eat somewhere, and something bad happens, and something unfair happens. Maybe they give you a bad seat, or your food was bad, and you say something. Especially with horrible online communities, people are always quick to be like, oh, first world problems. And to me, it's such an obnoxious answer, because it's like, well, yeah, there's always something worse happening to someone else. But that's like saying, because people are being beheaded in Saudi Arabia, I can't return my coffee because it was bad.
I couldn't agree more.
And it's such a way of dismissing. And those people that are saying first world problems, they have their own problems. It's such a way of dismissing other people, because we're all so irritated because everyone's agenda is so in our faces because of the internet.
Mm.
Which I think.
Well said. Actually, that's really true.
Thank you.
Everyone's agenda.
But I'm reminded of the. We don't talk enough about the nature of the human of the species, who we really are. When you just mentioned, was it Saudi Arabia or someplace?
I did. Beheadings.
Beheading. I've wondered how it happens that I, as a good person, I think of myself as a good person. I can read about children with flies in their eyes. I always think of that expression. you know, dying by the hundreds, thousands in other parts of the world. And I'm reading about that at 11:30 at night. At 11:50, I go downstairs, open the refrigerator, and have a little bite, you know, do a little more reading, go to sleep, sleep well that night, wake up the next morning, it isn't on my mind at all. And I only just lived with, in my mind, my experience in reading about how can I do that? Mm. I'm
cognitive part, dissonance?
It's
right?
I don't know the answer, but what I know is we should recognize that we're capable of that. I'm now reminding myself of, I flew 52 missions in World War II. I looked down as the bombs dropped because I was the radio operator, and I was the one who saw the bombs dropping from the bay, and I left the pilot know the last bomb had left the bay, and he could close the doors. That was my job. So all those times I saw our bombs from our plane dropping and then gathering with other bombs. And, you know, hundreds of bombs dropping. And I thought, well, one of them misses a target, and one of them hits a family sitting around the table. The picture I had then, I have in my head right now. And I thought, the hell with them. Worse than that, but I won't say the word. The hell with them. And then several hours later, asking myself, if somebody came near you with a pencil and paper and said, Norman, sign this piece of paper, and you'll forever mean that you didn't give a shit, let the bomb hit the family, that I would never sign it. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to be the person to sign that. But the fact of my life is I've never been tested. I don't ever wish to be tested, but I've never been tested. To bring it home more for everybody's understanding, the minute I became a father, and there was a baby in my life, a child in my life, I thought, if anybody seriously hurts this child, I'll drive the 6 hours, if it takes 6 hours, to get to that son of a bitch and kill him in front of his family.
Hmm. Yeah.
So I don't want to be that person either. But thank God I've never been tested.
Hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Why are you bringing out this stuff in me?
I don't know. I was just thinking I don't have anything to say. You brought up the war. I'm here to talk about something called girl logic. It pales in comparison. I'm like, getting dressed is hard. You're talking about dropping bombs on family.
Well, go ahead. Give me a reaction to that from a girl.
It's deep. No, I don't have. No. War transcends all gender. You hear that, Trump?
What we're all capable of.
What about Trump? What were you saying there?
I was just saying war transcends gender. Let the let transgender people fight if they are able. That's all. That's all.
But a meaner society. It's meaner.
Oh, yes. It's just a meaner society.
Is it?
That Fred Allen story is, I think, of in that context also.
It's... okay, so here's the other side of it. Are we meaner? Because I definitely think social media makes things more difficult. But so if you're bullied online, right? Like I've had the full wrath of hashtag Make America Great Again at my Twitter account, and it's horrible. People say horrible things, and it is.
What just kind of horrible things?
Whatever you say, because it isn't freedom of speech anymore. Whatever you say, people want you to die because you disagree. Not because you said anything that condemned anyone, but because you want that. Right. And then it's, you know, it's your religion, it's your body, it's your fertility, it's your looks, it's everything is up for grabs just because, and it doesn't have to be political or social, it could just be something random.
Yeah.
I like blue. Right. Go fuck yourself, I hope you get raped. So, what was the point of that before I said that?
I didn't want to hear you say you like blue either.
I don't like it that much.
I fucking hated that.
Hate blue. Fuck them. I'll sign a piece of paper that says the hell with them. Yeah. The hell with blue.
Don't say orange.
Nope. Oh, shit. Say that.
So here's the question. Are we meaner or is it just ever present because we have the outlet? Like a great example, transgender people, civil rights movements, all these things, the whole like woke movement that we're going through in this country now, a lot of white people are like, oh, I didn't realize that racism was, you know, still a thing as much. And it's because we have the media and we have the ways to share when police shoot people. We have the ways to share stories versus things just being not in your town. So are we meaner, or is it just that we have access to it?
I think we are meaner. I think that we are meaner. I think that's all very true. I think that all this, there's a great aspect to it that it's shining a light on all of these things that were going on that we didn't know. And now because of social media, we can see them all, and then and people reacted. But there are things that I might have talked about this before we were discussing this, but there was a children's show when I was a kid growing up called The Al Albert Show. And Al and Stella Albert from South Philadelphia had this local kids show where it was a variety show. So little kids would sing and dance, local Philadelphia. My cousins were on it in the Rita Rue Dance Review. I thought they were stars because they were on that show. But anyway, I auditioned for it and failed. I didn't get on, but doing impersonations. But anyway, so it was this wonderful show. And one day I'm sitting there and it popped into my head. And so as you do, I went to YouTube. I wonder if there's clips of the Al Albert show. And sure enough, there was a clip of a girl singing, a little girl, little, eight, nine. She's singing Shirley Temple kind of thing, right? Couldn't have been sweeter. And the comments were like, what a whore. And I mean stuff that was so vile. And one thing after another, after another, after another, after another. You know, and so are we meaner, or is there just now this outlet where the psychopaths, it was psychotic, the shit people were, and it went on forever, and I see that everywhere.
But we see it. I don't know if I even agree or disagree. I think the outlets are there, and my point was, when people are horrible to you, first of all, don't go in a comment section. You may as well shoot yourself. But when I turned off, like when people are, say, bullying me, I'm fine, but when people are mean online, when I turn off Twitter, it goes away. Anything anyone's ever said to me online, thank God, no one's ever said it to my face. And I'm not hard to find. I'm not looking for a fight. But if you really disagree, I post my times at the Comedy Store, on tour. You can come and say it to me, but nobody does. So I think
What are they releasing? I mean, how much?
It could be a hatred for Jews, women, whatever you got.
No, there has to be some hatred for the life they're leading. There has to be deep unhappiness to open up that kind of.
There is, but it's also, we also as a society have evolved to start saying that versus being offended. Because if somebody in 1970 walked up and just started calling your little 8-year-old girl a whore and all those things, you'd be so hurt. And now, because it happens so much, we're all taught to say, wow, your life must be terrible. I'll just withstand that because you're so sad. But it still sucks.
Oh, it's awful. Yeah. I mean, it's awful and it's everywhere. And I think it would be a mistake to think that that's not going from the internet, where people spend so much of their day now, that when they walk out into the real world, I don't know that there's a big difference. I think it bleeds out into the real world. And I think that's why you see the lack of civility everywhere.
But do you, I mean, what about, but here, if we had to argue the other side, there's like GoFundMe, right? So there's people just giving
them money.
Oh, there's
tons of, I agree.
And there's, you know, and the news doesn't show enough cops hugging people, people laying flowers down. The news, they like to show horrible images because that's what people tune in for.
Right.
I don't think we highlight humanity enough, and maybe it's because there's not enough, but.
Well, I think you're right.
We don't highlight our humanity. Right. I mean, the real nature of our humanity, that we, that people are capable. Is there a conversation going on anywhere about people's capacity to behave the way that you describe them on Twitter? Is there a national conversation or any conversation going on about that behavior?
Yes.
About why that has happened.
That bullying.
That's all, like, there's this bullying thing, the anti-bullying thing. The why, I don't know. The why you're unhappy, but, you know, when I was unhappy growing up, you know, who knows what people did? I wasn't unhappy, but it wasn't the same. So why is anyone unhappy? Shitty childhood. Maybe you're ugly. Maybe you're being bullied. You know, that's typically it. Somebody's not nice to you, so you take it out on others. Mm-hmm. I think we've also lost the capacity. Culpability is not a thing in our society. Mm. It's always like, well, something else happened to me. And it's like, or right that wrong, stand up for yourself. Don't perpetuate it. But that's also easier said than done.
Mm.
Right?
I like that also that you take on, I heard you talking about how everything's offensive now. Like those flowers offend me. That microphone offends me.
Everything. Even as I'm speaking, I'm thinking this is going to go out Monday, and maybe I brought up one thing. Like I'm bracing myself for someone saying something mean back, mm-hmm. just because they disagreed. Mm. You know, I think especially as Americans, we're afforded this amazing platform with freedom of speech. And people, like, there's a difference between vehemently disagreeing because you fundamentally said something that's horrible and wrong versus I just disagree. But the way that we express it.
Yeah.
A very sane thing is, I disagree. I like you as an entertainer. I disagree with your politics. Okay. Done. Versus, I wish your family was dead. I hope your dog dies on the way home. Right. I hope you have a heart attack. Like, just so aggressive.
Maybe we're coming to the place where I wish you were dead and with your family is a form of hello.
Yeah. Oh.
And it'll get worse from there.
Right. Right. That's the new I wish you hadn't said that. Well, we have evolved in one way. Norman Lear, you are getting the Kennedy Center honor.
Oh, wow.
Yes, I learned that. Well, I learned it actually a week ago, and they announced it today.
That's so cool. So yeah. When is that going to be?
December 2nd and 3rd.
Wow.
December 2nd is the evening at the White House, and then December 3rd is the Kennedy Center Honors. Wow. On screen, I mean on TV.
Yeah.
HBO,
yeah.
I think.
Will this be the closest you've been in proximity to the Donald? Have you ever met him?
I've never met him, and I don't think I'll be going to the White House.
Wow.
So.
Yeah. That's awesome.
You know, the Kennedy Center is all about the arts and humanities. Mm-hmm. And as I live in this world at this age, I couldn't value the arts and humanities more. I think they're part of our reason for being, our being human beings. That expression from us, you know, if and we are living with an administration that doesn't give a damn about something as important as the arts and
definitely humanities. Not humanities.
Which brings us together, which makes us one, which recognizes our common humanity. I mean, I could say it a thousand ways. Anyway, I couldn't visit with that person.
Oh, you have to go and say all that to his face.
Well, if he...
No, don't.
But it won't get reported.
Yeah, if no one's going to hear about it.
But they'll know if you don't go.
Then you'll just get taken out by a sniper. And that'll be that. Yeah. Don't go.
But, you know, being taken out by a sniper is the new I disagree with your position.
It's the highest. Yeah. It's the. That it's very right normal
at,
now.
That comes right after screw you and your family.
I hope your family dies.
A bullet
then
to the head.
Next is a bullet to the head.
Speaking of arts and humanities, my mother wanted me to tell you that she saw you speak at the Aspen Ideas Conference. Whenever you were there, she was there. They go every year. They go to TED. They do this thing. So.
Right.
I told her I was on my way to see you. She wanted me to let you know she saw you.
Well, what did she have to say?
She didn't say anything. She didn't say much.
Just that
that's
she was
interesting.
There. Tell her that's not enough.
It's not. I'm going to. She. To be fair, she has been laid over at an airport for several hours, so I think her mind is turning to mush.
But she didn't say she hoped your dog died. Right?
No, so it wasn't a proper greeting. And they go, you probably weren't there recently, right? Maybe it was a couple years ago?
It was a year ago, so.
She probably doesn't remember.
Yeah.
It was probably because there's just so many. And the
I know those people. When they get into their 70s, it's really, they really start to lose it.
Yeah, you feel bad.
Yeah, that happened in the 50s. So you will not go to the White House for the Kennedy.
I won't go to the White House. Gotcha. No.
And then you'll go to the thing, and then you'll be in that the booth seated.
But I'll be, along with the others, I will be a guest of the Kennedy Center.
That's so cool.
I'll sit where they seat me.
You know what's so strange? You're taught as a child, like, that's the president, you know, and it's the White House and all the honors that come along with it, getting, you know, if you do something, you get to go, or your Boy Scout troop gets to go. And there's such a hole in my heart knowing that even if I were invited to the White House, I wouldn't want to go. I wouldn't care about the accolades from this president. And not even, like, I'm trying to make a show of it. Like, I don't get the same goosebumps. I don't have the same pride in my country. As it relates to him.
Wait till you see your mail now.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It used to be respect the office if you didn't feel like the man. And now it's just like, are you kidding? Did you read the transcripts of the conversations that he had? It was in the Washington Post today, that conversation he had with the Australian leader and with others. And it's just, you go, oh, no. The Mexican president.
Was this about not the English-speaking thing? Was this, or maybe this was a meme?
No, that was yesterday.
Okay, cool.
About we're only going to let in immigrants. We're only going to let in immigrants who speak English.
Yeah,
now.
And it's like so not.
And can can create jobs and stuff. That's the new American dream.
He was asked, "Would you just accept immigrants from Australia and London, and England? Don't you realize that people talk English everywhere in the world, even if you wish to have English-only speaking
immigrants.
What a monster. What a... Just every... It's every single action. A, is there to distract from Russia, but B, is designed to marginalize people and make them feel even more ostracized. The transgender ban, military ban, was as much about transgender people as the Muslim travel ban was about Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, I just... You're just taking a group of people who already feel so not a part of something, and you're just shining a light on how different they are.
But see, I think that all comes out of the meanness of the internet and all of this, that you can say, fuck that girl, say that 8-year-old, you fucker singing that song. The president is now the product of just unfettered meanness. Say anything you want anonymously. So now your vote becomes something. Most of that stuff that you're talking about, it just seems like he wakes up and go, how can I really screw over
what can
those
I do?
Jerks that didn't vote? What can I do to... I know what it'll be. Transgender ban in the military.
Yeah. That way nobody notices all the weird things I'm doing. You know, you like to think living in L.A., which is a hellscape for the most part, if you don't live in a nice area. We'll call it a third world hellscape. And just managing traffic, and you sit there in traffic, and I always think to myself, there are people who wake up every morning and think, how can I add to this mayhem? How can I add to this traffic?
Yeah.
Even though I know that isn't the case, but with our president, I do believe he wakes up, he eats the heart of a newborn baby, and he thinks, how can I make this world a worse place?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
There's someone else laughing in here, just so you know, like when I said the newborn baby thing.
But you know, podcasts and comedy are going to change it.
Or what?
Podcasts. And comedy will change it all. Now, I do think comedy has a power of good, certainly, in what you've done and what you're doing.
I'm reflecting on what you guys were saying about him. And you were giving him credit for thinking. and I think everything is reflexive with him. I don't think he's thinking about anything. It's just reflexively talking about himself.
Right.
Yeah. And we just stand by. And we just, there's nothing we can do.
Let's get back to you.
Okay.
Because we're here because you're
speaking
here.
Speaking of Trump and himself, get back to me.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. You have a boyfriend.
I have a fiancé.
A fiancé.
This is an
extension of boyfriend into the eternity.
Yeah.
You expect to spend the rest of your life with this guy.
Well, the rest of his life.
The rest of his life with this guy.
I'm going to live a very long time.
Oh, you have? How old were you when you met?
No, I'm just kidding. I'm going. We met a year ago. But
yeah. So tell us about him. Is he in the business?
He's not.
He's not in the business.
He's a chef.
He's a chef.
Oh, that's good. You'll eat well.
Is that good? It hasn't been good for me. He's a chef, and he writes cookbooks with celebrity chefs. He's like the guy that does all
the hard work.
Interviewing. Yeah. And he's a writer. So he combines those things, and
he
opened a couple restaurants here as the overall chef. And everybody thinks that. Everybody thinks, oh, you're dating a chef. You're going to eat gourmet French food. But he loves vegetables and lentils, pasta, which I'm not a fan of. But so it's very – he likes to joke that he eats like a Greek widow when alone, like a potato and a lemon, and he's fine.
He has a sense of humor.
He's very – he's so funny that I will give him scripts and be like – and I'll trust him to give me a line.
Oh, that's great.
Because I think he's very funny, and he's very supportive.
I like the sound of all that.
Yeah, he's half Jewish, half Italian, so those two tend to mix well.
They mix very well.
He's from L.A.
I don't know anybody I care about whose favorite country is not Italy.
Oh, it's great. Sure. He's never been. So this is kind of funny. My mother was visiting this past weekend, and... She's very tiny. She's half half my body weight. She's like a little bird. And we hadn't eaten much that day. We went to dinner and she ordered one vodka martini. And she drank all of it before we'd eaten anything. And I'd never seen my mother drunk before. And she was drunk. And she's from New York and she's a tough lady, but she's very refined. And she was like, well, so where are you going to go on your honeymoon? And I was like, I don't know. I don't know. We both really love to eat. And I don't know where she took it, but she got very aggressive. She's like, you're just going to eat? You're not going to go to a museum or anything? I'm like, I don't want to go. She goes, you're going to fly around the world for a fucking piece of fish? And I was like, no one said fish. Why are you cursing? And then she kept, like, she got stuck in a loop. She was trying to say something about our wedding desserts. And she kept repeating the same thing. And I got nervous because I thought she was having a stroke. Because she kept going, when you have the cake, all right, when you have the cake. And she just, and I pulled her this, and I, very quietly because I didn't want to embarrass her. I was like, you are scaring me. Because you're repeating the same thing. She goes, give me this. I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm trying to make a point. And then everyone heard, and it was so. So the next morning, she had to pull Noah and me aside, and she apologized for her behavior. So, but it was just like, for a fucking piece of fish. I'm like, it is a honeymoon. This is not.
Would she say that? Does she speak that way? She uses that language?
She never talks like that. And she no, did. She'll get like did. A little New York once in a while.
That was mom's. You met your mother's party goblin.
I did meet my mother's party goblin. That is so funny. I was like, why are you, we're talking about a honeymoon. You're getting so angry.
Even mom has a party goblin.
Mom's party goblin comes out after one martini.
I have such a good
very
idea.
Tiny. That's so funny.
I have such a good idea. See that seat? You yes. Do this again with your mother in that seat.
Oh, my God.
With a martini.
She was just here, too.
With a martini.
With just one.
Yeah.
Because she's so tight. And my fiance, I was like, I've never seen her like that. My fiance's like, I'm a big guy, and I had one drink, and I was buzzed. So I can't imagine. And then we get up to leave. She's like, Eliza's a terrible driver. I'm going with Noah's mom. And I'm like, don't go with him. And she was just, I don't know what it was. We're not a drinking family. And that was her after one drink.
We could all have martinis and then just do the podcast with all of our party goblins.
Yeah, you can't eat all day.
Mine is a party Manson. That's what
I have. Oh, you kill
people
when you're drunk.
Yes, I have a party cool. Manson.
You recruit young women to a house in the valley and you kill
them. And send them out to kill.
To kill, right.
Yeah.
All right. Do you have a party goblin?
I have a party goblin.
What is it? What is he?
I never heard the expression.
I made it up.
She made that up.
Yes. And a party goblin is something that hampers destroys a party?
No. It's the opposite. Your party goblin is, we've all had those nights where you go out with the intention of having fun and you can't quite get it started.
Right.
And then you've had those nights where you're like, okay, I'll just have one drink. And it becomes this amazing night. Your party goblin, everybody has one, is this side of you that, like, when the next day they'll be like, Norm, you were dancing on the speakers. You're like, oh, party goblin got me. It's that sort of elevated side of your partying being. So,
well, our party goblin got to me within the last 2.5 years, I would say.
Really?
Yeah.
Where has he been?
It's a brand of vodka.
Okay, what brand?
Yes, Tito's.
Oh, Tito's is wonderful.
It's a family in Texas, I understand.
Yeah.
It was very small 2.5 years ago. I fell in love with it. It should be a sponsor. I'm looking at the booth now.
For all of us that are here, just in life.
The Tito family. And if you don't become a sponsor, I'm never going to say the word again.
Yeah.
Except when I order a drink. anyway, that's become my... I love the party goblin idea.
It's really funny.
Comes out and makes your party better. But they're not there the next morning. Party goblin's only there for the good time, and they're not there when you're sober. So any problem, you blame it on your party goblin.
Well, this has been a great party goblin event.
Yes. Wow, you're great.
Thanks, guys.
Events have ways of ending, and this is ending with the understanding that party goblin is a good thing.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And thank you, Eliza.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, thank you so much.
I love having you. And I was very serious without a vodka martini about your mother in that chair. I'd love to talk to you and your mother.
She would love it. She would. She's such a fan of yours.
I think an audience would love hearing it.
Oh, my God. Yeah. All right. He said it.
The mother and daughter truth.
I'll just watch. I'll be here for that.
Another hour. All of the above. Thank you all.
Hey, everyone. It's former WWE host Lillian Garcia. Let me ask you a question. Do you ever wonder how your favorite stars make it to the big time? Then come check out my new show, Chasing Glory, with Lillian Garcia on podcastone.com. Hear me chat with some of your favorite athletes and entertainers about their rise to the top. It's about to get real, raw, and inspiring. So join me for new episodes every Monday on podcastone.com, the new Podcast One app, or subscribe on Apple Podcasts.
What does it mean, this life, this day and night?
So I'm Norman Lear, and you can find me, should you wish to hunt me down, you can find me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at The Norman Lear.
And you can find me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Paul Hipp.
And life is good, and space and time. Give me some of yours, I'll give you some of mine.